You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Wow! Nick, what's that in your hand? It's me cock.
No, your other hand.
Oh, mate, this is the new Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0. Tell you what, mate, meaner, sharper, tighter, closer than ever. Look at that, eh? Woohoo! Look at the shine on that bad boy. What do you think of that? Yeah, touch it. Touch that.
I'm not touching your cock.
Just touch it. Look how shiny my balls are.
Wow, it is smooth, isn't it? Ooh, yeah, that's good. For the new Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0, head to manscaped.com and use this code for a 20% discount. FIGHT20 at the checkout. Can I touch it again?
Oh, yeah, please.
This is Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast number 538. We are the Fight Disciples, and this is dedicated to the world of mixed martial arts, mainly UFC, bit of Bellator, bit of Cage Warriors. Sunday night Cage Warriors action. Oof, we've got a bit of that to get stuck into as well. If it's the first time you've ever come to us, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you are looking for. FightDisciples.com is our website if you need an Android feed. You'll also get links to our social media and our YouTube channel on there as well. And there's plenty of conversational points in this podcast that will feature on that YouTube channel, so you can see us in the flesh, waxing lyrical, chatting away. And I'd just like to point out that my esteemed colleague here now has decided to change his look for the show. That's right. You may see him now coming up in the not-too-distant future with a fresher, more NYC vibe to the Fight Disciples. Is there a reason for this, Nick? Do you want to explain what you're doing?
I'm now the hat guy.
You're the hat guy.
I've made the decision that now when I go on TV or do any kind of media, I'm going to wear a hat.
Okay.
You know?
I think this has come from him spending a bit of time in Las Vegas last week with the DAZN presenters, Ak and Barak, who been informed have a hat budget for their show. So Nick,
exactly.
Of all the things that pricks Nick's ears up, is a hat budget. He's not interested in making content anymore. He just wants someone to pay for baseball caps. So that's where he's at right now.
So I've already texted our producer at BT Sport ahead of our trip to New York for UFC and later at the end of the month. And I've already said I need a hat budget, man. I need you to buy hats for me to wear on television.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is.
Is that additional to your wages, or is that out of your wages?
Additional to my wages. I need to be provided with a budget separate from wages, separate from travel budget, to pay for hats to wear on television.
Mate, you're a 44-year-old fella, right, wearing baseball caps on TV. What's the crack with that?
Listen, you hang around with a fella that wears chains and fucking sunglasses indoors and takes his shirt off at ringside.
Yeah, but that's his thing.
He's Ringo Starr.
Yeah, but that's his thing. That's his thing.
This is my thing. Why? Now.
No, you're having a midlife crisis, mate. That's what you're doing. You're doing it in front of our eyes. You've never been the hat guy all your life. 44 years, you've never been the hat guy. Now you want to be the hat guy. Why do you want to be referred to as the hat guy?
I just want to be the hat guy now.
Are you a bit worried? Are you getting
a bit of egg in a nest?
Are you becoming follically challenged, Nicholas? Is this where we're at?
But I've decided I'm not going to get my hair cut. I'm going to let my hair grow down here. So it's nice and long at the sides and the back underneath my hat.
Yeah.
And that's going to be my new look for Christmas. That's my Christmas. I'm going to let my beard grow out a bit more as well.
Yeah.
I just want to be like the hairy hat guy. That's going to be my Christmas thing. My Christmas look.
Okay. So when we're in New York for UFC 269, that's going to be the look, is it?
I'm going to take a selection of hats with me, yeah, to wear different days. Yeah. Yeah. As long as BT come through with my hat budget.
Yeah. You watch what happens, right, when we turn up in New York. First day of filming. Take the hat off, Nick. We're not putting the hat on TV. That'll be our production team. They'll tell him. And Nick will go, okay.
we'll see.
Look at him. Yeah. The hat guy. Love it. Right, we've got loads to talk about, actually, because there's fights being made. There's various bits linking to John Jones and Mike Winklejohn, which we're going to be speaking about. I'm sure loads of people have seen that. We've got some.
Ooh, I haven't seen that. Ooh, this is good. Okay.
Have you not? Okay.
Can we start with that then? Because that's news. I didn't know about that.
No, we'll start with the action at the weekend, mate. That's where we start, isn't it? We'll have a bit of review. We've got a knockout of the year from a kickboxing tournament at ONE Championship. Sensational stuff. We've got a bit of Jim Miller to talk about from the weekend. We've got some corner work to talk about. Oh, it's all action-packed here today, mate.
Yeah.
Action-packed on this show.
Mate, there was a knockout of the year on Cage Warriors last night as well, Sunday night. Did you see it? The fucking Bruce Lee kick. Whoop!
Like a heel
crescent
hook.
Kick. Oh!
Little heel hook job, yeah, I saw
splendid.
That.
Splendid. We'll come to that, yeah. Okay. Let's start with UFC then, at the Apex.
Thanks. We'll do that. Hat guy. We're going to start with our mate Danny Roberts, because that's the chat.
Yes.
Come on, let's get stuck
Danny
in.
Danny is back. Danny is back.
Settle.
Hello.
Down.
Hot chocolate is back. Hot chocolate is back.
Look at you.
Now, solid win. Solid win.
You're such a knob. Right.
Solid win.
You're such a knob.
29-28, not a problem. That was my scorecard. 29-28, Danny Roberts.
Now then. The scoring of this fight is where there is a bit of contention with fans all over social media. The judges gave a split decision to Danny Roberts. Twitter says no. All right? Now, he won the fight. He won the fight.
He did win the fight.
And yeah, but listen, I just think that there's a lot of people out there, and this is a perfect opportunity for us on this podcast to just once again go over scoring criteria. Because there's a lot of people that watch MMA, and they might have a whiskey in their hand or a drink in their hand, or they just haven't read the unified rules and the scoring criteria, and they don't actually know what they're looking out for when they're scoring a particular fight. There's people out there that can throw up. Mate, I can go into an octagon and throw punches. Mm-hmm. I can shadow box the shit out of stuff. If I don't land, I ain't scoring. And for me, I think what you've just said there with the 29-28 scorecard in the favour of Danny Roberts is the way that I scored it as well. I have absolutely no problem with any of the judges' scorecard, even the 30-27. And I think that is where there is a problem for a lot of fight fans, because they will look at the 30-27 and then they start throwing the word robbery around. They start throwing the word robbery all over the place, don't they? Now, I understand that 30-27 can make it seem a fight being one particular way, and that's where the robbery chat comes from. But when you actually understand the scoring criteria and then you analyse every individual round, and you've got to do that. Forget what you've seen the previous the 5 minutes before. Just analyse 5 minutes, stop. Analyse 5 minutes, stop. Analyse 5 minutes and stop. There is an argument, and I don't agree with it, but there is an argument, and it can be justified that you can get to 30-27 in favour of Danny Roberts. I personally scored it 29-28 in favour of Danny. I'm going to break it down for you now, Nick, mate. I'm going to break it down for you now, because the first round is where a lot of people are getting on the high horse. There's a lot more output from Amiv. I get that. Output. Forget output. What you are looking for when you are scoring this fight are those significant moments, the significant strikes, the significant grappling. Is there any in there? The more significant, the more telling strikes in that first round, even though he's throwing less and landing less than Amiv, the more significant shots are coming from Hot Chocolate. They are coming from Danny Roberts. There is also, when that fight hits the ground in the first round, there is also a moment which could be, I'm not saying it is, but could be classed as a potential fight-ending scenario where Danny throws up that triangle. It's not on. Let's be honest. No. It's not on. It's not stiff. Ameev's not in any real danger at that particular point. But it is a moment where Danny is effective grappling. So you've got to score the effectiveness of a fighter's work compared to the output of a fighter's work. So the first round is close. There is no doubt that it is close. It is not where you can categorically say Ameev wins that round, Danny Roberts wins that round. But if you score it based on the criteria and the criteria alone, that is Danny Roberts' round.
Interesting. I scored Ameev the first round, I've got to be honest.
Okay. Second round. Well, that means that you scored the second round to Danny Roberts.
Yes.
Interesting.
I had Ameev winning the first and Roberts winning the second, which was close, and Roberts winning the third. I've got to be honest. For me, the most convincing round was the first for Ameev.
Was it?
I thought Danny won a close second round and Danny won a close third round.
Well,
I'm totally honest with you.
The most convincing one for me was the third in favour of Danny Roberts. So the second round, very close.
Yeah.
I personally think that Ameev takes that round based purely on effective grappling. It's very close. The output, the strikes, everything about it is a very close round. In fact, both first and second round are very, very close. You probably class all three rounds being very, very close. But like I said, as I'm going through the criteria and watching everything, my judgment on that was that Ameev takes the second round. So I've given Danny Roberts the first round based on what I've just said. I've given Ameev the second round based on effective grappling. And the third round, I think it's the most conclusive of the rounds. And I've given that Danny on the effective striking. Now, based on what I've just said, you've just given Danny Roberts the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's a very, very close round. So if I was to maybe judge it in the way that you've judged it, it is not beyond the realms of possibility that you can get to a 30-27 in favour of Danny Roberts. I have no problem with any of the scorecards. If the split decision had come back in favour of Ameev, I would also have no problem with that because of the tightness of those rounds and how intricate you had to get with the scoring of it. Because there wasn't so much effective action, you've then got to take in, obviously, duration and dominance and various things like that. I scored it 29-28 in favour of Danny Roberts.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm watching it now. I can watch it because I've had some training and I've done some homework and I know how to score a fight better, I believe, which is why I get to the end of the fight and I go 29-28 Roberts. But I did it slightly different. I had round two and round three. I thought he just upped the pace and just started to dominate those rounds with more effective striking, largely. I thought he was a slow starter in the first round, which is why I gave the first round to Ameev. But anyway, but I'm also seeing through my old glasses, the way I used to watch fights from a non-knowledgeable perspective, there's times when Danny was throwing that right hook and missing wildly.
Correct.
And he did it
left
quite
hook.
A lot. The left hook. Well, it was kind of both, I think.
He was wild. He was a lot of wild stuff in there.
He was loading up wild hooks and wild punches and missing by a mile in the first round especially. But throughout the fight. And I think if you're watching
that...
And he looked
more knackered. If we're honest, in that he looked more knackered at the end of the fight.
Yeah, he did. And then when you get to... When you're missing wildly and then Ameev maybe has scored in a takedown, but you're not looking at what's happening on the ground, you're just going, oh, he's took him down now. Old school way of going, that's how you win a fight, you take someone down, doesn't matter
incorrect.
What you do. That's incorrect. I know, that's incorrect, but from a non-knowledgeable mind, I think that's why they go, well, that's Ameev's round. All I've seen there was Danny missing with half the shots he threw and Ameev scored two takedowns. But it doesn't work like that. It's effective grappling, it's effective striking, and more than anything, it's about damage. And I think Danny Roberts had those head-snapping moments with his punches, with his strikes, when it was up against the fence. So, again, that's how I scored way. But again,
a takedown is just a change of position.
Change of position.
You've
exactly.
got to do something with the change of position. And if you actually look at it, he stuffs quite a lot of those things and gets himself out of those situations
very quickly. Danny's groundwork was outstanding and his ability to get back to his feet was outstanding as well, which I appreciated. But again, I didn't score them for those moments.
No, you
because
didn't.
It's your fucking job to get back to your feet.
Correct.
So, but just for a full and disclosure, when they read out the judges' scores and they went split decision, I kind of went, okay, I kind of get it for those two the reasons I've just explained. Mm-hmm. They went 29-28, 28-29. And then when they read the third score and they said 30-27, I've got to be honest, I thought Danny had lost. Because in my mind, the first round for me was the clearest round to score for a Meave. So I'd scored it. I thought Danny was great in two, great in three. For me, lost the first. So when they said 30-27, one judge has got it unanimous, I thought, well, two and three were kind of close, I guess. Okay, give it to a Meave then. I was surprised one of the judges had a 30-27 in favour of Danny. Maybe I need to go back and watch the fight. It was at the end of the day. I'd been watching the boxing. Unlike you, I was a couple of whiskeys in.
Maybe I will. There you go,
maybe,
then.
Maybe I will go back and watch it. But, listen, the right man won. In my opinion, the right person won. And it's about time, and I tweeted this straight away, it's about time Danny Roberts had some good fortune. Fuck me. He's been injury-ridden. He's been out for two years. He had a false negative COVID test, which ruled him out of a fight a few months ago. The kid deserves some good fortune. But on top of all that, he deserved to win the fight.
Okay.
2 rounds to 1.
Okay. Well, based on what we've just said there, I'm just looking at the actual official judges' scorecards, right? So the judges were only unanimous in one round. And that one round was the third round. They all went Danny Roberts third
Danny
round.
Danny Roberts.
Okay. So if you look at the first round, you've got one judge, the guy that scored it 29-28 in favour of a Meave, has gone for a Meave winning the first round.
Right.
The other two judges have gone with Danny Roberts. And then if you look into the second round...
He's obviously got a Meave again.
Yes, he scored that in favour of a Meave again for the second round, which I did the exact same thing. And then one of the other judge, the judge who scored it 29-28, the guy that scored the exact same card as me has done it the exact same way as me. Danny Roberts first round, a Meave second round, Danny Roberts third round. And then you've got obviously one judge that has given all three rounds in favour of Danny Roberts. What I will say is this. Let's stop using this word robbery, yeah?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely
just because a decision has gone against what you think doesn't mean it's a robbery.
Of course.
It was a tight fight. Every round is very, very tight. You've got to really knuckle down on the scoring criteria, fully understand the scoring criteria before you can come to a conclusion. Don't just sit there with your whiskey in your hand going, that guy's won. No, mate, just because he's throwing it... We kind of had this discussion, didn't we, in the world of boxing when Billy Joe Saunders fought Canelo. Loads of people thought that Billy Joe Saunders was up at the point of the stoppage coming. No, he wasn't. He wasn't up at all. When you knuckle down to it and watch what actually happened, output is great. Don't get me wrong. Output's great, and people talk about octagon control and all this type of stuff, and it bugs the shit out of me when people are saying, won the round off that takedown. No. It's what he did with the takedown. You've got to do something with the takedown. It's a change of position. There's something got to happen. And if you actually look, when Amivi's going for those single legs and he's taking Danny down, and Danny does, he he's in a compromising position for a few moments, but then he readjusts his body weight and where he is situated in that grappling exchange, and he bounces back to his feet. You don't score Danny for bouncing back to his feet, but you also don't score a Meave because he didn't actually do anything offensive there. All he's done is change the position of the fight. So those are the things that you've got to consider when you are talking about scoring of a fight. Effectiveness. Where's the effectiveness? And for me, Danny Roberts, yeah, his output was less than a Meave, but when he did land, it was more effective than what a Meave was doing to him, in my opinion. Hence a 29-28 scorecard.
Bingo.
You happy?
Yeah, absolutely.
At least we came to the same conclusion.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Listen, the rounds were close, so you're bound to have a difference of opinion. I will go back and watch it again, though, see if I can get to that 30-27.
Now then, this is what I want to talk about. Corner work, yeah? I love this. This is right up my street. Obviously, Aspen Ladd's in the main event against Dumont. It's a fight that is going against Jim West. Great name, by the way. Jim West.
Great. Doesn't he make tuna?
I think he does, yes. Is it Jim West?
Is he canned tuna?
I think it is something West. I don't know if it's... Anyway, we're going off the beaten track here. Now, right, yeah. Okay. So he's in there, And he is obviously speaking to Aspen Ladd a certain way in order to get a reaction out of Aspen Ladd, to get Aspen Ladd back into this fight, because Aspen Ladd's getting her ass kicked. She's getting beat.
Yep.
And that proved by the back end when she ends up losing this decision. I have absolutely... I know he's come out and apologised for this, Jim West. And he said maybe...
Not necessary.
Absolutely, mate. I have absolutely no problem whatsoever with the corner work. No problem whatsoever with the way that he spoke to Aspen Ladd in those particular moments of the fight. This is a fucking fight, ladies and gentlemen. This is a fight. The fighter is a product of the teachings of that corner. They are a representation of that corner, of that coach. Nobody mourned at Jim West when he bollocked Aspen Ladd in the fight against Kunitskaya.
That's right.
He was in between rounds. He gave her a fucking telling off. He says, I need this, and this from you. Otherwise, you're going to lose this fight. Get out there and go and do the bit. She went straight out off the bat and smoked Kunitskaya, knocked a clean out. And everybody's celebrating. Oh, that's amazing corner work. He was doing the same thing. He was doing the same thing because his fighter was losing the fight and he was trying to get a reaction out of his fighter. He knows that fighter inside and out. He's seen what she does in the gym. And she's not giving him, in the fight, what he expects from her. It is his job to get her mentally into that particular fight. I thought he was absolutely bang on. He has absolutely no need to apologise. If Aspen Ladd wants to part company with him in the aftermath of that, that's on her. But in that particular moment, he had his job is to get his fighter through that fight to win the fight. And that is the tactic that he took, and I am fully supportive of that tactic. Don't come at me saying, oh, well, it's a man speaking to a woman. No. It's a coach speaking to a fighter. That's what it is. It's a coach speaking to a fighter. Forget the sex involved in that. Who's who? It's a coach speaking to a fighter. Jim West was bang on. Aspen Ladd didn't respond. That's the end of it.
I think it blew up because a few people had a few things to say about it, including Misha Tate. Misha Tate, I think, came out and had a bit of a pop on him and stuff like that. So I feel like he was backed into a corner where he felt like he had to respond. He had no business. He shouldn't have been put in that position at all. You know, if that was a male fighter in there, no one would have said a word. And as you say, it's not about sex in that moment. It's about a coach trying to get the best out of his fighter. My only criticism of the whole thing, and I like Jim West, man, he's dolphin friendly, but my only criticism would be the fact that it wasn't constructive enough. There wasn't enough technical advice in there. It was more frustration going, you're fucking throwing this away. You're fucking throwing this away. Do better. You know, what are you doing? Why are you fucking fighting like this? You know, it was more like emotionally trying to get her going. Rather than, okay, well, you've done that for a couple of rounds now, Mr. Cornerman. Yeah. Try something else now, because she still hasn't snapped out of it. She's still losing the fight.
I think
now is this
end,
a point where he goes, right, technically, forget all this. Forget about the last three rounds. Let's try this. That's my only kind of thing. But coach and fighter know each other inside and out. They know what they prepared for. They know what the game plan is. And I know Aspen Ladd took this fight last minute because she missed weight the other week. I know she jumped in to replace Holly Holm. So chances are they didn't have a big, huge game plan for Dumont. But they did have a plan. And whatever that plan was, she was not delivering on that plan.
Correct.
And that's what trainers and fighters do. They train together for 8 weeks, 10 weeks to prepare for a fight. Again, in this case, it got switched. But in those last few moments, they would focus on Dumont's style and come up with a plan where Aspen Ladd fights her kind of fight and not Dumont's kind of fight. But she fought Dumont's kind of fight throughout the fight, pretty much. And he was just trying to snap her back out of that to go, this is not what we work for. We haven't trained for 10 weeks to do this. We haven't spent all them hours in the gym honing your craft, getting you better as a mixed martial artist for you to deliver on the night like this or not deliver. In that moment, he knows her better than anybody else. Only he, as a head coach, should and could be able to snap her out of it and remotivate her. And as you said, in the past, being the bad cop has worked. Snapping her out of it by going, hey, fucking come on, get your shit together. Boom, it's worked. So There's a reason why it should and could have worked again here. It didn't, and that's just the way it is. Had she come out in that fifth round and fucking just completely and utterly annihilated Dumont, the opposite, people would be going, wow, what amazing corner work. He knows us so well. He eventually snapped it out of it. He's done fantastic. I think it's only the fact that she lost a big points decision that has opened the floodgates. People go, he shouldn't be speaking to her like that. Yes, he should. Yes, he absolutely should. And
that's
listen,
what she pays him for. That's what she's paying him for.
In any other environment, I agree. A man doesn't speak to a woman the same way he speaks to another man. It's about respect. It's about, you know, having respect for the opposite sex and everything else. I get it. But in this environment, this crazy fucking prize fighting environment where they're in a bubble dressed semi-naked trying to throw down with another human being while the world watches, in this crazy world that we live in, that coach has only got 60 seconds to get the best out of his fighter. Not his female, not his wife, not his girlfriend, not his partner, not some girl he works with, his fighter. How can he get the best out of his fighter? He's got to deliver in that moment. He's got 60 seconds to do it. His decision was to go down that road. It's worked in the past. It didn't work this time. I think all the criticism is absolute bullshit. And I hope Aspen Ladd, I haven't seen anything from Aspen Ladd. I hope she comes out and makes a statement and stands by what he was trying to do.
Hmm. Yeah, man. Listen, I just hope that there's not... We kind of live in a society, don't we, where everybody just wants to be offended by shit.
Yeah.
It's a fight. Stay it's a fight, man. Exactly. And as I said, stop looking at it as you would do if you saw that on the street. This is a fight. And as Nick just said there, you've got 60 seconds to get the best out of your fighter. And I think Jim West did his best to try and get the best out of his fighter. He's not doing it to upset her. He's not doing it to fucking, you know, bully her or to embarrass her. He's doing it because he cares. He's doing it because he knows that she's fucking better than what she was putting out. Yep. End of chat. End of chat.
Jim Miller.
That was next on my list,
mate. Jim Miller.
Next on my list. Fucking hell. If you're a Cowboy Cerrone, you're thinking to yourself, whoa, settle down, son. You're going to take my fucking knockout win rate and my records are going in the bin because Jim Miller. Fuck me. Listen, for a guy that has never fought for the UFC gold, for him to still be here, for him to still be doing what he's doing, and Bisping kind of touched upon this, didn't he, in the aftermath when he was talking about fighting on UFC 100, fighting on UFC 200. He's aiming for UFC 300. We're at, what, 30... 31, 32 pay-per-views away from that. So that's 2 years, yeah? At least 2 years that we're going to get more of Jim Miller. What a performance, man. Thoroughly deserving of his bonus. And he's just a dude that you're just guaranteed entertainment. You put his name on the fucking till and you think to yourself, Jim Miller's fighting, man. I'm not going to bar yet. Just let me watch this dude. He's going to give me something. And boy, did he give us something on Saturday night.
It's just amazing how he keeps going. You could mention the same thing about Arlovski. Arlovski's fucking still winning fights in co-main events, and he was in the UFC before Dana White and the Fatitas even bought the fucking thing, which is mental when you think about it. Jim Miller, 2008, he was in UK as well. His first UFC fight was in Birmingham in 2008. The fact that he's still throwing down like this, the fact that... And you know he's got Lyme disease as well, which is something you can never get rid of. He got it off some bug when he was out hunting or something. It's quite a big thing up in the northeast of the US, up around that area. So he has to cope with that, the medication that goes with that as well. But listen, man, the likes of these Jim Millers and the Arlovskis and stuff like that, you know, you think as a kid coming into the UFC, you're like, fuck yeah, gonna get me a scalp. Gonna get me a scalp, baby. And I tell you what, if you're not something a bit special, if you're not a fucking, you know, a Tom Aspinall or something like that, you're going to get unstuck against these guys because these people aren't made like the rest of us. Jim Miller is not a normal human being. Do you know what I mean? There's something in this crazy motherfucker that's part cyborg. That's just like, I will fight forevermore. You know, he was literally born to do it. Been around the sport so long, nearly 40 years of age, just a complete and utter monster. And he's putting in performances like that, you know, knockout of the night, fucking bonus winning performances. And you're like, where does this journey end? You know, listen, he's never going to fight for UFC gold. And if you sat him down, he'd probably go, cool, man, I've got no interest in fighting UFC gold. but he's absolutely part of this Legends League. But he's slightly different. We're not matching him with legends. We're matching him with fucking young guys who are just coming into the UFC trying to make a name for themselves. Meanwhile, Jim Miller's starching them. Phenomenal. Phenomenal. And, mate,
you've got what you've got here. I mean, you mentioned Arlovsky there, right? With Jim Miller and Arlovsky, and it's good that they were both on the same card at the weekend. The UFC must be knocking one out over these dudes, because you've got two guys that have got established names. Established, everybody knows who the fuck they are. But yeah. You know, we've got fond memories of Arlovsky and his reign at the top of the heavyweight division. Okay, it's not there now, but he's still winning fights. Okay, yeah. So he's highly competitive. It's not like he's chopped liver. He's highly competitive, still in there doing his thing. Jim Miller, okay, he's never fought for UFC gold, but he's in there and he's still winning fights. And he's winning fights. He's not ambling through them. He's knocking fucking lads out, right? He's doing it properly. So if you're the UFC matchmakers, you're going, right, we've got this young prospect coming through here now. Who do we? I tell you what would be a good test. Stick him in with Jim. Stick him in with Arlovsky. And they don't say no. Neither of them say fucking no. They don't go, oh, lads, I'm at this stage in my career now. I could do with a little bit of a nice dance. I just want to go out and wave to the crowd and have a bit of a roll around with someone. Neither of them go, no. Yeah, go on then. Tom Aspinall. Yeah, go. Yeah, Sam, mate. Fucking bring it on, yeah. What the fuck? It's crazy, mate. It's crazy. So if you're a UFC matchmaker, they ain't going anywhere for a long time, them two dudes.
I think what you'll find is as well, unlike the Junior de Santos or the Overeems or people like that who are on massive money, I think the likes of Arlovsky and Jim Miller probably aren't on massive money. But what you'll find is they continue to live their dreams to be fighters. They're on a lot less money, but they're fighting three or four times a year.
Yeah.
So they're probably making the same money, just being nice and busy and active. And it's allowing them to, for their careers, rather than it just stops overnight. They're like in control of their own destiny. Yeah, man, I'll fight. Listen, you know my rate, 40 grand, whatever it is, win, loss, bonus. Get me out three times a year, Sean, not a problem. You know I'll never say no. You know I'm there whenever you need me. Proper company men that you know for a fact, they haven't got agents and everything else going like, well, you know, I don't care how many Overeem's lost. This contract says 250,000 to fight guaranteed. That's what we're fighting for. Arlovsky and Jim Miller, without knowing too much, I guarantee their management, if they've got management, are under strict instruction to not argue and just say, yeah, man, when and where, we'll be there. That is the fucking code of Jim Miller and Arlovsky. So when they win fights, you're like, mate, this fucking sport is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, but Nick, it's the manner of winning the fights. You know what I mean? At this stage of the career, there's people that are just ambling through certain situations and you might get your hand raised every now and again with a decision. Jim Miller's smoking kids. Eric Gonzalez was supposed to be a dude that's coming. He's coming in. Yeah, everybody's high on him. Jim Miller's like, well, yeah, all right, mate, sound. And to be fair, Gonzalez puts it on him in the first round, puts it on him. And you're thinking, all right, here we go then. This is maybe the end of Jim. Nope. Comes out second round, bang. See you later, kid.
See ya. Left hand, down the pipe. Good night. That's all she wrote.
Well, man.
Jim Miller's 38, nearly 39. Andrei Arlovsky's
mate, he's younger
than me. Andrei Arlovsky's older than me.
Mate, unreal. Amazing. Unreal. Fair play, Amazing. Jim Miller. Well deserving of your bonus, pal. And well deserving of another fight. Yet another fight. Where do we want to go first here? Do you want to do Bellator first?
Yeah, man.
We'll do Bellator first.
Corey Anderson, fucking hell. Fringe top 10. UFC light heavyweight. Now,
you're being harsh there. You're being harsh there. Fringe, he was, mate. He was fringe top five. You tight bastard. He was fringe top ten.
Fuck off. Fringe top ten. Anyway, he's now the number one contender in the light heavyweight division of Bellator. And he smoked Ryan Bader in 50 seconds or whatever it was.
That's
the
big, man.
Formerly known as Ryan Bader.
Well, that's it, and that's the key thing. People get an odd on, don't they? Going, oh, he did better in it. Like, what was it? 40 seconds of the first round. Amazing. Watch this. Bum, bum, bum. But it's the artist formerly known as Ryan Bader. It's not the same dude. It's not the same dude that was in the UFC. And it, obviously, I know that he's had a great tenure in Bellator, becoming a multi-weight world champion. But I watched him get smoked in the heavyweight division. I've now watched him get smoked in the light heavyweight division. How much do we read into it? Because I've watched Corey Anderson fight in the UFC, and he's come up short. Yeah. Listen, it's great. I don't want to take anything away from him. He's got a proper fight on his hands next time round, though, because I watched Nemkov in his fight, and okay, I would have loved that to have been Nemkov against Rumble, just to see where we're properly at. Nemkov was outstanding. I was like, just fucking smothered the dude. And you're like, whoa, mm-hmm. you can't get away from anything that this guy's doing. So yeah. Corey Anderson, Nemkov, that's a fight that I'm excited by. I think it sets up the pinnacle of this tournament nicely. But I'm not getting carried away with the performance from Corey Anderson against Ryan Bader. It's not one of them where I'm going, whoa, get Corey Anderson back in the UFC. It's, yeah, well done, Corey Anderson. As he's listen, he's been on record saying that the UFC kind of gave him the notoriety of being a fighter. The Bellator provided him a life because they're paying him a lot more. Maybe that, I mean, that's something to look into. Maybe that, the weight of that, taking that weight off someone's shoulders where you're not thinking about the finances of a fight anymore and you're just going in there and doing your thing. Maybe there's something to there's something in that, because obviously the kid is most certainly performing a lot better than he was in the UFC in Bellator. But you've got to kind of put that in together with the level of opponent that he's fighting. Simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Ryan Bader just doesn't... He just looks like a shot fighter now, unfortunately. I like Ryan Bader too, but it's like he achieved all his dreams in Bellator. Light heavyweight champion, and a bit like Andy Ruiz in boxing. He got to the top of the mountain and then thought, well, I've done it now.
Mm.
I'll just get a couple of paydays on my way out. And, you know, his chin check there was for me, show the fighter that's a bit washed. Likewise, Benson Henderson was on this card, and he's a shadow of the fighter he once was as well.
Nemkov's legit, though, man.
Nemkov is the only one in Bellator that you could rank in independent light heavyweight rankings, in my opinion. But listen, as you said, Corey Anderson's got nothing to lose against Nemkov. Nemkov's the kind of the golden boy of Bellator. Yeah. It's just a shame he can't speak English because he's just unsellable, unfortunately, but he can fucking fight. But Corey Anderson can change his life if he beats Nemkov, because he would become the guy, he'd become the poster boy of Bellator. So I'd like to see Rumble back in that mix at some stage as well, maybe facing the winner. But if I was Rumble, I'd go, right, put me in with Bader, let me do what Anderson's just done, and then throw me in with the winner after that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Well, I want to just go off-piste here and just go into the world of kickboxing for a split second. One Championship's kickboxing. I love One Championship because they don't give a fuck. They just want our fights, don't they? They make great, great fights, whether it's in mixed martial arts or whether it's in kickboxing. And they give us moments that just last forever, highlight real moments. Now, I'll be honest, my knowledge of the fighters and their career paths and the talent levels isn't as much as it is when it comes to MMA, right? But I knew about this fight. And the reason for it is because my kids do kickboxing and the guy that teaches them, he is a former kickboxing world champion. And he was saying, hey, are you into your kickboxing on an elite level? You need to be checking this fight out between Superbon and Petrosian. This is going to be amazing, blah, 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 blah. And I saw little bits like Liam Harrison, for example, was putting up on his social media about this particular fight. So I was high on it, man. I was like, okay, I'll do a bit of research. I'll have a little bit of a nosy in. Oh, cool. Right, okay then. Petrosian's this, that, and the other. Superbon's got an opportunity. I suppose he's the underdog coming into the fight. The level of opponent, it's mega. Settles in. Watching this fight. Yeah, oh, this is good. Yeah, love this. Now, bang. Whoa! Where the fuck did that come from? Dudes like Petrosian aren't supposed to get knocked out like that.
Yeah.
We're talking elite, we're talking the best of the best in this game, and he got smoked, man. It's the knockout of the year. It is the knockout of the year. What a knockout. Unbelievable. And then he went off for a little bit of a skip. Did Superbond, didn't he? Skipping around the octagon like fucking enjoying himself. Mega knockout.
Mate, did you see Justin Barry? And he's a former kickboxing superstar as well. Did you see his knockout on Cage Warriors though last night or in the early hours of this morning?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
That little crescent kick.
Oh, yeah, the heel hook kick. I've seen it on social media, yeah. I've seen that, yeah.
Like a fucking Bruce Lee moment. That's through him in the mix for knockout of the year as well. But it looked good, that Cage Warriors show. I've only seen a highlight so far. I whizzed through, watched the main event, Spike Carlisle. Absolutely fucking ran through JJ Ambrose like he was at a 12-wheeler truck, to take Tyson's analogy. But it looked like there's some good finishes on there, you know, not many points decisions, loads of finishes, loads of knockouts. So I'm looking forward to going back and watching Cage Warriors. But yeah, man, good. And then obviously this weekend, we've got another full UFC card and the return of Fido. I've got to be honest, right? Yes, he's fighting Timothy Johnson. Yes, it's the artist formerly known as Fedor. Yes, 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 yes. I get it.
Yeah.
But genuinely, if I could be anywhere in the world this weekend on Saturday night, it would be the VTB Arena in Moscow, Russia.
Moscow.
Moscow. To watch Fedor walk out and fight inside a cage. I know he's washed. I know it's not the same guy. But just so I can say, you know, fucking pride never die, baby. Just so I can be one of those old school MMA aficionados and be able to go, I seen Fedor fight once. You don't need to know when it was or what stage of his career, but I seen Fedor fight live once. Kind of when Thomas the Hitman Hearns fought in Manchester on a fucking, I think it was Paul Ingle, Poison Junior Jones, Manchester Arena, world title fight. Thomas Hearns fought there. He was about 45 years of age. And I'm sure he won like a cruiserweight IBO belt against fucking whoever. And he was, you know, he was a shadow of him former self. But I remember being like, fuck me, I got to see Thomas the Hitman Hearns fight live. Doesn't matter that he was a geriatric at the time. I got to see him fight live. It's kind of like that about Moscow this weekend. Rather than being at the Apex in Vegas, rather than being here,
disgrace.
I would just love to see Fedor make that walk, man. Imagine. Gorgeous.
No, mate.
Get me to Moscow.
No. Ugh. Bellator 269 is what you're referring to this weekend with Fedor in action against Johnson. There's UFC to preview, but before we get into any of that, I want to talk about John Jones, because obviously we know what's going on, and there's bits that we can't say because obviously it's a legal matter. But what I was impressed with this week is Mike Winklejohn coming out and speaking about kicking John Jones out of the gym. He's no longer welcome in their gym at the moment. I mean, there could be moments in the future where that does change. But he is banned from the gym for the time being until he goes and sorts himself out. And there's loads of people that have reacted to that. And I've seen that John Jones has reacted to that on social media. But for me, this is the perfect type of friend / coach that John Jones needs right at this moment in time. You know, fake friends tell you the pretty lies, don't they, mate?
Yeah.
The real friends tell you the ugly truth, the shit that you don't want to know. Now, okay, people can flag up, well, why has he not done this in the past? Maybe he has. Maybe he has done this in the past. Maybe he has said stuff in the past where John Jones has gone off the rails a little bit. And John hasn't listened. And this particular moment, as Mike has said, is the final straw where you hear the call from the officer, from the person at the hotel, where he's talking about John's daughters, making reference to phoning the police and what have you. Maybe that is the straw that brought the camel's back. Like I said, these two and this team have been together for such a long, long period of time, haven't they? They've worked together for such a long, long period of time. Yeah. For Mike to take this action, obviously something moralistically for him has been broken. Mm-hmm. And I think he's taking the right avenue, and he's taking that avenue for the right reasons, in my opinion, through love for a friend. He has a great relationship with John. He's not taking this decision lightly, and for him to take that decision and say, you are not welcome in this gym until you get yourself sorted out, until all this is a sorted situation, I think is the right thing to do. And hopefully John listens. And this might be the moment that John then can move forward and become a better person.
Yeah, listen, I hope that is absolutely the case, you know, and I hope a lot of all the other coaches that John works with take the same kind of approach. I know he does a lot of work with Brandon Six Guns Gibson, who's the other striking coach at Jackson Wink, a very, very impressive coach. Obviously, Greg Jackson himself, who's the brains behind the entire operation. But you've got to remember that Mike Winklejohn, you know, they've got some of the elite women there, Holly Holm's there, and, you know, they've got the Bellator champions in there, and Clarissa Shields has trained there. You know, Clarissa Shields just the other day was talking about, I was listening to her on Mike Tyson's podcast, and she was talking about the fact that, you know, she works with Holly, she works with Mike, she works with Greg, but she said, I get one-on-one time regularly with John Jones. We do a lot of stuff together, and he's this and he's that. So, you know, you've got to protect the fact that there's female fighters, elite female fighters in that gym that need to feel like they, as women, are being supported. And that kind of actions, even though it's not against them, against any woman, will not be trivialised and will not be looked over. So I think it's absolutely the right decision that they've made there. And hopefully it carries some weight. As you say, it's all good and well. John Jones coming out and saying, I'm never drinking again. I'm going to be a reformed character. I've lost count of the amount of times John Jones has pretended to be whiter than white when he isn't. You know, he's a dark, twisted animal. You know, he's a lot more Mike Tyson than he wants to let us believe. And I think John Jones has always needed to embrace that side of his personality and control it rather than pretending it doesn't exist and then it regularly just runs wild. That's the problem. He is a monster and he needs to control the monster. He needs to control our Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde part of his personality rather than ignoring it. And for too long he's ignored it. And for too long he said, oh, that was a one-off. Or, you know, that was a mistake. Or that was this, that was that. For too long we've allowed him to make excuses. And he shouldn't be allowed to make excuses this time around. He should be made to pay the full consequences of his actions, however strong they may be. And I'm the world's biggest John Jones fan. But right here, right now, if I never see John Jones fight again because of what he's done, then I would 100% stand by that. In fact, I want to see him go to jail. I want to see him actually, you know, be penalised for his crimes.
You want to see him go through the proper judicial process.
Of course, I want to see. I want to see him have his day in court. I want this thing to play out the way it should play out, because this is not about protecting John Jones. This is about protecting John Jones's potential victims in this scenario, and they're the people that need to protect him. And how, whatever that means long term for John Jones, well, that's life. He's got to pay the consequences for his actions. So, I didn't know anything about it until you mentioned that. I haven't been across this at all. I completely, like you, support the decision. I hope they stand by it. This thing's got plenty of parts to play out yet. I just hope that he receives the punishment that his actions fully deserve.
Mm-hmm. On a lighter note, December the 11th, from backstage to the cage, it's on. They've signed the contracts. We are going to get, in front of our very eyes, three pieces and a soda. Jorge Masvidal and Leon Edwards have agreed to terms to fight at UFC 269.
Tres rondas. I think that's important, you know.
What?
Three rounds.
Yes.
I think it's important that it's only three rounds. And I tell you why. I think Masvidal has requested that. I think Masvidal has wanted the three rounds. I think Leon would have been happier with the five rounds because it means Masvidal has to fight at a completely different pace. I think now it's a shootout. I think Masvidal will treat this like it's a sprint, and Leon's got to be wary of that. Listen, I can see a situation very similar to the Nate Diaz fight. I can see Leon being two rounds up. I really can. But I think Masvidal at some stage is going to put his foot down. And Leon's going to be asked some questions. Can he answer those questions? Absolutely. But I think it's going to be tasty, man. It's going to be very, very tasty. Could steal a show.
Oliveira versus Poirier is the main event, right? We're fucking going to Vegas for Christmas, baby.
Yes!
We're going to Christmas. We're going. We have to.
Yeah.
We cannot not be at that card. December the 11th is when it goes down, UFC 269. I'm just happy that this fight is on because this division is moving. Next, when is it? 2 weeks. We are going to be in New York as this division moves along where Kamaru Usman is fighting Colby Covington. Great fight first time round. Does Colby Covington deserve another shot just yet? No, if we're really, really honest. But he's a mouth and he's a guy that has created a great fight previously. I'm not averse to seeing a rematch, so therefore we're getting it. Listen, Jorge's had a couple of opportunities fighting for that world title off the rise of his stature in 2019. And Leon Edwards has just been ambling along, beating everybody that he's put in his way and not getting that title shot. He's got to do something. It's that age-old saying, isn't it? You know what I mean? Doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. Leon's been doing the same thing over and over and over again. And we're all supportive of the fact, from a professional point of view, that he's done the business in the octagon. He's done that. But for some reason, he's not resonating. He's not clicking with the American fan base. He's not clicking maybe with the British fan base. He's not clicking with the UFC. So the UFC are reluctant to put him into an opportunity to go and fight Kamaru Usman for that UFC title. He's got to do something. Nate Diaz was supposed to be that moment. They gave him the moment. They gave him the moment. It was there. And although he puts on a clinic for 4.5 rounds, the lasting moment of that fight is what Nate Diaz does in the last 30 seconds. Everybody remembers that particular moment, which is unfair, really, because he puts on that clinic. They've given him another opportunity now. Don't get bigger. Name-wise, with all due respect, Masvidal is the biggest name in the welterweight division. That's the biggest name. Now you've got an opportunity. They put him on a plate for you. There you go, sunshine. If you're all that you're saying that you are, this is the moment now. Go and do something in this moment, and then nobody can absolutely turn round and say, he's not ready for a title shot yet. He deserves it. If you go and beat Jorge Masvidal, you deserve it. If Jorge Masvidal goes and beats Leon Edwards, he lines himself up for a title eliminator against maybe Gilbert Burns, or I know that they're mates or whatever, but you know what I mean? He lines himself up for an opportunity to fight once again, maybe one fight away, for fighting for the title once again. It's a great fight, man. It's a great, great fight.
It was an inevitable fight because obviously the backstage material, which they can play out to death to sell the pay-per-view. Oh, so it was inevitable.
They already have done. Happen. They're already rolling it out, aren't they?
Of course. But it, you know, it was crazy that Leon initially started to distance himself from the fight once it was almost being made. We were talking about it last week, scratching our heads, thinking, what the hell is Leon doing? I'm glad he's signed up for it now. I'm glad he's committed to it. And tell you what I would do if I was Leon Edwards. Be ready. And what I mean by that is, I haven't seen anything from Colby Covington at all.
Nothing.
At all. I wouldn't be surprised if Colby pulled out of that fight with the Usman title fight. And I think Leon could get the call like he has in the past. And I think this time he needs to be ready. So it's going to be a strange camp for him. I think he needs to be ready for the call just in case. But of course, all roads lead to Masvidal because he doesn't want to turn that call down again. Because it was made very public last time that he turned down a shot at Kamaru Usman at late notice to step in. And I think he can't afford that to happen again this time. I don't think the call will go to Masvidal. I think the call will then go to Burns or even Luque or something like that. But Leon will be the first call. And stranger thing, and I've just got this thing, because I've seen nothing at all of Colby Covington, nothing at all. I've just got this weird thing that I think Colby might pull out. So, yeah, man, I'm down for it. Vegas, Christmas, get all my Christmas shopping done. Boom. Let's go.
Nobody's doing Christmas
shopping.
The hat guy's
ready. The hat guy's ready.
The hat guy. this weekend, we roll on in. You've already mentioned the Fedor fight, which you've got a sick affiliation with in the UFC. Paulo Costa, Marvin Vettori.
I like it.
It's weird just because obviously the narratives that these two take when they are pre and post fight. But yeah, man, I think as a fight, it's a great fight. Paulo Costa's got a lot to prove here. He was gun shy in the fight against Izzy, wasn't he? You know what I mean? Izzy absolutely bent him over and spanked him.
Literally.
Listen, Marvin Vettori, we know what we're getting with Marvin Vettori. He brings it, he has a go, doesn't he? And again, Izzy, many people would say took him to school in that particular fight. These two are Izzy cast-offs going into this main event at the weekend. And if they are what they say they are, they've got a lot to prove. I think we could get a bit of a firefight, mate, this weekend.
Yeah, listen, I think obviously Vettori's going to be looking to take the fight down and take it into his world, use his grappling, and Costa's trying to bounce back from the only loss in his career, you know, and prove that he wasn't just a one-punch knockout artist flashing the pan. I think it's a great fight. It makes absolute sense. The only guy to beat either of these people in the last 5 years is Izzy. Izzy beat Vettori twice in the last 5 years. That's the only person he's lost to. Costa's only lost once in his entire career. That was against Izzy. They were all big losses, though. They weren't narrow decisions. They both got embarrassed a little bit by Izzy. So I think there's a lot, absolutely a lot to gain here. I don't know whether it puts them straight back in for a title opportunity, but it keeps them relevant in the top five. The loser kind of isn't relevant anymore, which is crazy when you're Paulo Costa to think he's lost. He could lose two fights and be knocked out of the top five, but that's this middleweight division, man. It's fucking crazy. So I think it's a belting main event. It can only deliver. Costa only knows one way to fight, and that's fucking swinging heavy leather. And Vettori's got a good chin and good ground game. So I think it could be a cracker.
On the main card this weekend, you've got Caceres against Choi Sung-woo, which will be a great fight. You've got Trinaldo taking on Dwight Grant as well. And you've also got a guy that the UFC have been quite high on for some time, Negamurenu. Hopefully I pronounced that correct. He's taking on Villanueva. That kicks off the main card. But I'm going to point my attention towards Jai Herbert, because Jai Herbert fights this weekend as well. He's on the prelims, taking on Karma Worthy. A wonderful opportunity in the lightweight division for Jai Herbert. This is it now. Jai's had his feeling out process, hasn't he? Obviously, he came a lot of people high on Jai. There's a rhyme
high
for
on
you.
Jai.
From his time at Cage Warriors, and rightfully so, man. Listen, the Black Country Banger does bits. He's an entertaining dude, but I think he's just found it a little. He's obviously found the step up in class.
He has had a step up in class as well.
He's been
matched fucking horrifically.
Yeah, he's had some proper ones. Absolutely, some proper ones, man. And that has just taken a little bit of time to adjust. Obviously, he's now full time. If you remember when he was Cage Warriors champ, he's still scaffolding, man. He's still had his normal job. So he's gone full time. He's dedicated himself to this craft. He's been matched very competitively, I think we'll call it. Listen, we're not against that. We want proper fights, and he's been given those proper fights. He's just taken a little bit of time to adjust to the UFC compared to Cage Warriors. This weekend's a big weekend for him, man. Big weekend for him. He, you know, people know Karma Worthy's name. Go in there and do the business, son.
Mate, as you said, it's a massive opportunity. It's another twat of a name, though.
Yeah.
You know? Why does Jai Herbert always fight guys where you go, oh, fuck's sake, really? You've matched them with him?
Yeah, but we love that. That's what we're here for as fans, isn't it?
I know, but not, you know, Jai has never had the opportunity where you match him with someone and you go, oh, I'll better check Tapology for that guy. I've never heard of him before.
No, you know who they are, yeah. You know
everyone Jai gets, you think, oh, for fuck's sake. And you know what? I throw Karma Worthy. This fight 2 years ago, 18 months ago, and you're like, oh my God, what the fuck has Jai Herbert got to do to get a layup here? But obviously, the last 18 months haven't been kind to Karma Worthy. He's two successive first-round knockout defeats. He doesn't know how to handle it because that's what he does. He knocks people out early, Karma Worthy. But then you look at who he's lost to. Like, last time out, the Australian kid, that crazy Jamie Mullarkey, who, again, has got incredibly heavy hands. He can smoke anybody. And then prior to that, it was Otman Azatar, who was basically the fucking future of this weight division. So Karma Worthy's lost to two absolute studs there, in my opinion. This guy's back's against the wall. This guy is the knockout king, and he's been knocked out twice, but by studs.
Yeah,
he's coming into this super motivated. I just feel for Jai, man. I'm just like, what the fuck has Jai got to do to get a layup? Evidently, he ain't going to get one. And unfortunately, this is third UFC outing. Third name.
Fucking hell, man.
It's tough on him, man. I just feel for him because, as you say, it feels a long time ago when he was like running through people at domestic level, you know, and they put him in with Trinaldo, they put him in with Moicano, and you're like, for fuck's sake, come on. But unfortunately, this is the UFC, man.
Exactly.
This is where the best people fight. You know?
Listen, right? Don't be starting now going all boxing on me. We moan at boxing for fucking... We just moaned about Newcastle for shit fights, yeah? He's in a fight. He's in a proper fight. And the ramifications of winning this fight, mate, they're big. I mean, obviously, he was in with Trinaldo, yeah? So Trinaldo's on the main card now, on this card at the weekend. So an opportunity for Jai, that's hopefully what he's seeing. He's going, all right, then, I fought that guy beat me, sweet as a nut. He's now on the main card. Here we go. I'll go and have a fight. I'll do bits on Karma Worthy. You never know. I'll be on the main card. Plus, there's also the time of the year that this is happening.
Yeah.
We're getting to the end of the year and everybody knows March is UFC London. Everybody knows that that is where we're going towards. That's what he's at. He should be thinking, I'll do the bit here. I'll do the bit. I won't be a prelim on UFC London. I want to be a main card guy on UFC London. That's what I want to be. He's talented enough. There's no doubt about that. He's an exciting fighter. I'm delighted with the matchmaking. I know it's tough. I know he's up against it. I know he'll be the betting underdog. But I love that. That's why I love this shit. Fucking get him in. Go on, boy. Let them. I just hope that his early start to the UFC hasn't made him shot shy, because that's his strength. His strength is his hands. Let him go, man. Let them fuckers go. Because you know that Karma Worthy's letting them go. So you've got to have it, mate.
Oh, what a fight. That's a good fight. I think that's the highlight of the prelims for me, mate.
Yeah, it was. Well, listen, the highlight for me, overmatched Jai aside, was going to be Mason Jones getting the fucking one back against Alan Patrick. The rematch was supposed to be happening here. But it was only this morning when I realised it fell off. I don't know why it's fell off. Alan Patrick's pulled out. So I'm hoping they're going to get another opponent for Mason. I'm hoping he's already in Vegas. I'm hoping he's good to go. But apparently Alan Patrick has pulled out, according to Tapology. That rematch, which fucking we desperately wanted. You know, Mason Jones, undefeated coming into the UFC, has that flat performance on his debut where he just couldn't seem to get going. Then he comes in with Alan Patrick, all fired up. We love Mason Jones because he talks the talk, he walks the walk, he can fight like fuck. He's a real prospect.
Yeah.
Then he gets bloodied, you know, it becomes a no contest because of the eye poke against Alan Patrick. Yeah. They book it here to run it back, and now Alan Patrick's pulled out. Just like, what has Mason Jones got to do to get a bit of luck in this bloody octagon?
Hmm. That's a shame, that, man. I was looking forward to that. But yeah, there you go. Some good fights this weekend. Obviously, a bit of British involvement there with Jai. And on that main card, as I said, look out for the one that kicks off the main card with Nikolai Negumorenu against Villanueva. You've got Trinaldo, as I said, against Grant. Caceres against Choi Sung Woo will be a belter. I'm just skipping over the next two fights until you get to the main event. I just hope that the main event, they just bring it. Just go, fuck it, let's just have it. Costa against Vettori. On paper, looks a belter. I just hope they don't stink the gaff out. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Okay, mate. There you go. I think that's us done, isn't it?
Yeah. Can I take my hat off now? Getting bored of wearing it already.
Thank you very much for tuning in to us. We'll have all the fallout for this week's fights on next week's show. We'll also have a preview for UFC 267 because Abu Dhabi is the destination the weekend after. You've got Jan Blachowicz against Glover Teixeira, Petr Yan against Cody Sandhagen, which is great. And then probably we're going to crown him as the only fight disciple, Dan Hooker taking on Islam Makhachev on that as well. And there's also a lad that we're very high on in that light heavyweight division, Magomed Ankalaev, taking on Volkan Uzdemir on that card. So there's lots to preview on next week's show, so make sure you come back.
And Lerone Murphy's out as well. Boom, back on home turf.
Of course he is. It's Abu Dhabi. He only fights in Abu Dhabi. He doesn't fight anywhere else. He's been with the UFC 2 years and he's never fought anywhere else other than Abu Dhabi. Unbelievable. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to us. Pleasure as always to be in your company. Subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also do that via our website, fightdisciples.com. We're all over social media and we're on YouTube as well, where the best bits of this podcast will feature, as well as other exclusive pieces of content. So make sure you subscribe. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.